Imagine a threat actor sitting in a dimly lit basement, like halfway across the world.
Right.
They don't send you a malicious link. They don't trick you into installing malware on your smartphone. In fact, you never interact with them at all.
You wouldn't even know they're there.
Exactly. Using literally nothing but your phone number, they tap your private calls, intercept your bank's two-factor authentication SMS codes, and like track your physical location on a map in real time.
It's wild. It completely sounds like the plot of a dystopian cyberpunk novel, doesn't it?
It really does. But it isn't fiction. This is the documented reality of our global telecommunications infrastructure today.
Yeah, it's just how the system works right now.
And that is exactly what we're exploring in today's deep dive. We're pulling from this massive strategic analysis from Tech and Security.
Titled The Global SS7 Vulnerability Autopsy.
Right. So our mission today is to debug one of the telecom industry's most guarded secrets. Unpack this, archaic signaling protocol that quietly runs our modern lives, and most importantly, equip you with strict digital hardening guidelines to protect your identity.
Absolutely. And to set the mood for what we're about to uncover, imagine the backdrop behind me shifting from like a sleek modern data center to a massive web of copper wires, mechanical relays, and, 1970s switchboards.
Oh, I like that visual.
Because to understand how someone can hack a phone number today, we first have to like travel back to an era before the internet even existed.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are stepping into the time machine and going back to 1975.
The golden age of analog communication.
Yeah, bell bottoms, disco, and a governing body called the CCITT birthing something called Signaling System Number 7 or SS7.
Yeah.
The whole point of SS7 was to act as a universal language for telecom switches all over the globe, right?
Exactly. Because, I mean, the engineers had a massive logistical problem to solve back then.
How so?
Well, if a business executive in London needed to call a supplier in Tokyo, those two completely disparate national networks needed a standard protocol to talk to each other.
They had to actually route the physical call.
Route the call, handle the handoffs across different countries, and figure out the complex cross-border billing. So SS7 was designed to be that invisible universal bridge.
Right.
And astonishingly, over 50 years later, it still is. It remains the core language instructing the global grid on how to route your text messages and phone calls today.
But the tech and security analysis points out a pretty massive foundational architectural flaw here.
Yeah, a huge one.
Because in the 1970s, telecom networks were this exclusive, highly regulated, closed club. You only had a handful of massive state-owned telecom monopolies.
Exactly. So the engineers who built SS7, they built it on a foundation of implicit trust.
Implicit trust, meaning what exactly?
Well, that implicit trust is the root of the entire crisis we have now. You really have to put yourself in the mindset of 1970s telecom engineer. The idea that a random civilian, let alone like a militia syndicate, could gain physical access to these massive, room-sized international telecom switches was just unthinkable.
Right, because physical security was the only security.
Exactly. So they never bothered to build in default mechanisms to authenticate the devices connecting to the network.
Wow.
And worse, there is zero end-to-end encryption for the control messages passing between these international switches.
It's basically like a VIP club from the 70s where the bouncer checks nobody at the door because they just assume everyone inside the building is automatically a trusted VIP.
That is the perfect analogy.
So if a telecom switch in, say, Eastern Europe, taps the shoulder of your local carrier in New York and says, "Hey, this subscriber from New York is currently roaming on my network. Please forward all their texts and calls to me."
Your home network just blindly complies.
It just hands it over.
Completely. It doesn't ask for a cryptographic signature. It doesn't, double check the routing. It just hands over the data.
That is wild.
There's a great quote from the source material by Carsten Knoll from Security Research Labs that captures this perfectly.
Oh, yeah. What does he say?
He says, "The SS7 network is a walled garden where everyone inside is implicitly trusted. The problem is the walls have completely crumbled, but the trust remains."
That is a chilling quote. But okay, if this system started as a closed club of giant state actors, how exactly did those walls crumble? Like,
Oh.
how are amateur hackers getting their hands on the keys to this kingdom today?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's actually an unintended consequence of modernizing the telecom industry.
Really? Modernization caused this?
Yeah, because over the last two decades, we've seen an explosive proliferation of what we call MVNOs, mobile virtual network operators.
Oh, like the smaller companies that rent space on big networks to offer cheaper mobile plans.
Exactly. And we've also seen a massive rise in third-party bulk SMS gateways used by businesses for, like, marketing or alerts.
Right, the whole democratization of telecom access. I mean, it was meant to break up the monopolies and make things cheaper and more efficient for everyone.
Right, but in opening up the market, they inadvertently opened up the underlying network.
Oh, I see.
Access to SS7 is no longer restricted to a dozen state-owned monopolies. It's accessible to thousands of private entities globally, big and small.
And I bet not all of them have great security.
Exactly. And the historical dossier on how this evolved is fascinating. Back in 2008, a security researcher named Tobias Engel stood up at a conference in Germany and issued the very first theoretical warnings about this vulnerability.
2008. And imagine the industry response back then was probably pretty dismissive, right? Treating it like a lab experiment that would never happen in the real world.
Largely, yes. They didn't think it was a practical threat. But then came 2014, when researchers performed live demonstrations proving global call interception was, well, highly achievable.
So they went from theory to a live demo.
Yeah. And then theory crashed into reality in 2017. We saw the world's first confirmed financial SS7 attack.
What happened?
Threat actors actively drained German bank accounts by intercepting the SMS two-factor authentication codes sent via the O2 Telefonica network.
Wow. Which brings us to the landscape today, in 2026. The walls aren't just crumbled. People are basically selling the bricks on the dark web.
That's entirely accurate.
Because the source highlights the rise of SS7 as a service. Like, you don't need to be a rogue telecom engineer anymore.
No, not at all. For a monthly subscription fee, anyone can rent access to a compromised SS7 node.
That is terrifying.
And when a bad actor rents that access, they acquire what the industry calls a global title.
A global title?
Yeah. You can think of a global title as the master key to the telecom matrix. And they pair this with adaptation protocols, specifically one called SIDTRAN.
Okay, SIDTRAN, that's the bridge between the old and the new, right? Taking those archaic 1970s SS7 commands and packaging them up to run over modern IP networks.
That's it, exactly. It allows hackers sitting on a standard, you know, internet connection to masquerade as legitimate telecom operators.
Unbelievable.
They send authentic-looking commands through the internet directly into the heart of the cellular grid. It's a staggering escalation.
So a business initiative meant to increase market competition accidentally granted state-level surveillance access to anyone with a dark web account.
Pretty much, yeah.
Here's where it gets really interesting and honestly quite alarming. We understand the landscape and who is getting in, but I want to debug how exactly they trick the network matrix into handing over your sensitive data.
Okay, let's break it down.
Like, I want to understand the actual mechanics of how they steal a bank code.
Right. So the exploit relies on manipulating a specific subset of SS7 messages called the mobile application part, or MAP.
MAP. Yeah.
Under normal circumstances, MAP protocols are totally mundane. They update your status, locate your device when a call comes in, and manage the technical handoff when your car drives from one cell tower coverage area to another.
So to initiate an attack, the hacker first has to figure out where your phone is located on the global grid just to target you. The source calls this phase one, or target discovery.
Right. The threat actor dispatches a standardized query called send routing info for SM directly to your carrier's home location register.
The HLR.
Yes, the HLR. It's essentially knocking on your home network's door and asking, hey, how do I route a message to this specific phone number?
And because of that archaic absolute trust architecture we talked about, your home network just assumes this is a legitimate inquiry from another telecom provider.
Exactly. It trusts the request implicitly.
So it obliges, and it hands over your SIM card's unique hardware identifier, the IMSI, and the address of the specific switch your phone is currently using.
Right. And armed with that golden data, the hacker executes phase two, the actual exploit.
Injecting the lie.
Yes. They send an update location message back to your HLR. This message falsely declares, your subscriber with this specific IMSI has just traveled to my network in a different country. Please update their routing path for all incoming calls and texts.
And lacking any cryptographic validation to prove otherwise, your home network blindly accepts the update.
It does. It just overwrites your actual physical location with the hacker's virtual location.
It's literally like filing a fake change of address form with the post office, and they just start sending all my mail, my bank statements, my personal letters to a thief without ever once asking to see my ID.
Yes, it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
And applied to your cryptocurrency or bank account, the results are devastating.
I can imagine.
Let's trace a two-factor authentication code under these conditions. Say a hacker has already stolen your password through a separate, you know, phishing attack.
Okay, so they have the password.
They log into your bank. The bank server says, great, let's verify it's you, and dispatches a one-time password via SMS.
That text message enters the telecom network. The switch checks the poison database to see where to route it. It thinks you're roaming on the hacker's virtual network.
Exactly.
So that text message, the SMSMT or mobile terminated message, bypasses your actual smartphone entirely. It never even lights up your screen.
No, it doesn't. It is routed directly to the hacker's dashboard.
Wow. And Taken Security specifically warns about these hybrid attacks.
Yeah, where the hackers already have your password and then they use the SS7 exploit to silently bypass the SMS code.
And you remain completely oblivious to the intrusion until your account is drained.
Completely oblivious.
But wait, if the network is blindly handing over your text messages to a hacker's routing address, it begs a much bigger question.
Which is?
How does the network know where to send a text in the first place? It inherently has to know your physical location, and that introduces the whole silent geolocation tracking aspect of this.
Oh, absolutely. This requires a major paradigm shift in how we think about digital privacy.
Because most people believe that if they turn off their smartphone's location services or, like, disable the GPS toggle or deny app permissions, they are untrackable.
Most people do think that. But in the realm of SS7, your phone's operating system settings are completely irrelevant.
Wait, let me make sure I'm getting this right. Even if I turn off location services, strip away all app permissions, and do everything right, I am still broadcasting my physical location just by having my phone powered on.
Yes, 100%.
That's insane.
Because as long as your device is powered on, its cellular modem has to communicate with a nearby cell tower just to maintain a signal. The network matrix always knows which geographical radius you occupy. Otherwise, you know, it couldn't connect your calls.
Right. It needs to know where you are to ring your phone.
Exactly. And if the network knows, a hacker connected to an SS7 node knows.
Let's break down how they extract that location. The hacker dispatches an inquiry called Provide Subscriber Info to your home network.
Or an anytime interrogation query, yeah.
And they are basically asking, where is the subscriber with this phone number right now? And the network responds with something called the Cell Global Identity, or CGI.
Right. And the CGI is the precise, unique identifier of the specific cellular tower your phone is pinging at that exact millisecond.
And the accuracy of this is staggering.
It really depends on where you are.
Right. Tech and Security breaks it down by environment. If you are in a major urban center, because there are so many overlapping cell towers clustered together, the accuracy is under 50 to 200 meters.
They know exactly what city block you're standing on.
In suburbs, it's about 500 meters to 1.5 kilometers, so they can pinpoint your specific neighborhood.
And on rural highways, the radius widens to like 3 to 10 kilometers simply because the towers are further apart.
Still, that's pretty close. And once the hacker retrieves that cell ID code, they just cross-reference it against massive open-source databases like OpenCellid.
Yeah, they instantly get the exact longitude and latitude coordinates of that tower plotted on a map.
Just from a phone number.
Just from the number. What's fascinating here is that intelligence agencies, state-sponsored APT groups, and cartels have leveraged this for years.
Oh, I'm sure.
They don't always need to deploy complex, multi-million-dollar zero-click spyware like Pegasus to track a target. SS7 natively offers this location tracking capability to absolutely anyone holding the keys to the network.
And because this operation is happening entirely at the infrastructure level, what networking engineers call layer 3, no warning icons, no little green dots or arrows will ever appear on your screen.
None. You are being monitored in complete silence.
And obviously, a VPN is useless here, right? Since we're operating beneath the IP data layer, down at the signaling layer between the actual cell towers.
Correct. A VPN cannot touch or protect telecom infrastructure signaling. It only encrypts your internet traffic.
Hold on, though. If this is a known exploit, when we've had confirmed financial attacks since 2017, you're telling me multi-billion dollar telecom giants have just sat on their hands for almost a decade.
Whoa.
Why wouldn't they just patch the vulnerability or put up an SS7 firewall?
That is the core of the infrastructure dilemma. The telecom industry isn't ignoring it, but fixing it is incredibly complex.
Because it's a global standard.
Exactly. They're actively transitioning to 5G standalone architectures. Unlike SS7, 5G aims to use much more secure, modern IP-based protocols using HTTP2 and a protocol called Diameter.
Okay, so how does Diameter actually fix the blind trust issue?
It fundamentally changes the conversation between servers. With Diameter and HTTP2, they use TLS encryption and strict cryptographic handshakes.
So it verifies identity.
Right. So when a foreign network says, hey, I have this user roaming on my network, the new protocol effectively says, prove it by presenting this highly specific digital certificate.
That makes sense.
It patches that blind trust loophole by requiring cryptographic validation. And operators are deploying advanced signaling firewalls to filter out suspicious legacy commands.
So why is the tech and analysis so urgent if 5G fixes it?
Because of backward compatibility. As long as legacy 2G and 3G networks remain operational anywhere in the world, and as long as our modern 5G networks still have to bridge connections to those older systems to ensure a call can go through globally, the vulnerability persists.
Right, because the weakest link breaks the chain.
Exactly. The firewalls help, but they cannot provide 100% security due to the open nature of the bridging requirements. The shadow of 1975 still hangs over the global communications grid.
So what does this all mean for us? I mean, we've painted a pretty bleak picture of a fundamentally broken global infrastructure here.
It is bleak, yeah.
But the Tech and Garage autopsy doesn't just leave us in despair. They outline a strict defensive protocol. Since we cannot personally climb up a cell tower and fix layer 3, how do we armor plate our digital identities?
The overarching strategy is migration.
Migration.
Because you, the end user, have zero administrative control over the telecom infrastructure, your only viable survival strategy is to abandon the network's native security entirely.
So take it into our own hands.
Yes. You have to migrate your defense up to the application layer, often referred to as layer 7, through strict end-to-end encryption.
Okay, let's get specific. If SMS is inherently broken, how do we securely prove who we are to our banks and email providers?
Well, the very first hardening guideline from Tekin is to eradicate SMS two-factor authentication from your life completely.
Just get rid of it.
Completely. You need to go into your banking apps, your crypto exchanges, your email, and disable it. Instead, bind your accounts to offline authenticator apps like Google Authenticator or Authy, or use physical hardware keys like a YubiKey.
It is crucial to understand why these apps solve the problem.
Right.
Because an authenticator app uses time-based one-time passwords, or TOTP. The beauty of TOTP is that it operates completely offline.
Exactly. The code that expires every 30 seconds is generated locally on your device's internal chip using a shared cryptographic hash.
And because the code is never transmitted across the cell tower, it is fundamentally immune to network layer interception.
It literally bypasses the telecom grid entirely.
I love that. And we apply that same application layer logic to phone calls, right? The guidelines strongly suggest migrating from cellular calls to VoIP for anything sensitive.
Yes. Refuse to use standard GSM or VoLTE cellular voice routing. If you are having a confidential conversation, use apps like Signal or WhatsApp.
Because they enforce end-to-end encryption.
Right. So even if an attacker uses an SS7 exploit to intercept your traffic routing, all they capture is a stream of unreadable encrypted data packets. They might hijack the connection, but the content remains mathematically sealed.
We also have to be proactive about auditing our own devices for stealth diversions, because hackers relying on SS7 will often initiate call forwarding without your knowledge to reroute your data.
That's a very common tactic.
And you can actually dial specific MMI codes on your phone's keypad to check this.
Yeah, dialing star hash 21 hash or star hash 62 hash will display if your calls or texts are currently being diverted to an unknown number.
And if you want to neutralize and erase all active diversions instantly, you just execute the command #002#.
That is a brilliant immediate action step you can take right now. Just open your dialer and check.
Definitely do that. But what about legacy banks? Some older financial institutions absolutely refuse to let you use an authenticator app. They basically force you to use SMS.
Yeah, that's frustrating. The Tekin guideline here introduces the concept of compartmentalization using a burner SIM.
A separate SIM just for banking?
Yes. If you are forced to use SMS, get a dedicated SIM card that you only use for those specific banking alerts. Keep that phone number a strict secret.
Right. Never link it to your public social media profiles.
Exactly. Don't use it to register for grocery store rewards and keep it out of public directories. Because if the threat actors don't know the phone number exists, they cannot target it on the SS7 grid.
Makes total sense.
Finally, for users of secure messengers like Telegram, there is a specific recovery protocol.
Right. If you ever suspect your account was compromised via SMS interception, immediately go into settings, then devices, and terminate all unrecognized active sessions.
Kick them out.
Then, crucially, enable what Telegram calls a cloud password. That way, even if a hacker intercepts your SMS code again in the future, they hit a brick wall because they don't possess your dedicated local password.
It's all about layering defenses. By moving authentication off the network and encrypting your communications, you strip away the inherent advantages of the SS7 exploit.
Exactly. You render their network-level access useless at the application level.
What an incredible journey today. We started in the analog trust of a 1975 walled garden where a few state monopolies implicitly trusted each other to route calls.
Yeah, a much simpler time.
And we watched those walls crumble under the weight of modern efficiency, giving way to a hyper-connected reality where anyone can rent the master keys to the telecom matrix on the dark web.
It's a huge shift.
But more importantly, we mapped out exactly how to fight back. Awareness is your first shield. You actually have the power to move your security to the encrypted application layer today. Thank you for joining us on this critical mission to armor plate your digital identity.
This deep dive truly highlights the danger of legacy infrastructure in a modern threat landscape. And, you know, it leaves me with a final lingering thought. This raises an important question. If our entire global communication grid is resting on a 50-year-old protocol that naively assumes everyone connecting to it is inherently good, what other fundamental systems running our modern world, our power grids, our financial routing systems, our air traffic control, are silently resting on that exact same outdated assumption of trust?
That is definitely something to think about. Until next time, make sure those authenticator apps are generating codes offline. Punch in those MMI codes to check your forwarding, and don't let anyone in a basement halfway across the world wiretap your life. Stay curious.